Well, hello and welcome to the Smells Like Money podcast. Join me, Suzanne Chin Taylor, the doo-doo diva, as I interview guests who are making an impact on how we manage and operate systems for conveying and treating wastewater. As a veteran of the wastewater, trenchless, and civil infrastructure industry, each week I'll be bringing you industry know-how from industry pros who know how. Join me each week as I speak with representatives of organizations that are utilizing disruptive or new technologies and methods, and executives who are excited to share how to be successful and sustainable in our vital industry. So whether you want to learn about the latest trends in technology, in treatment or trenchless, gain tips on training and retaining great talent, or simply how to be more efficient, productive, or profitable, this podcast is for you. Ready? Let's dive right in. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Doo-Doo Divas Smells Like Money podcast. Today, we have a very interesting guest, Kieran Molly, and he is an impact investment consultant. And a little later, I'll let him explain what all that means. And we're going to be talking about a number of very interesting topics as it relates to wastewater infrastructure, wastewater treatment plants, and just our environment in general. And for those of you who might be interested in what I would consider sustainability measures or green impact and trying to reduce the carbon footprint, or how can I contribute to making things more efficient, being more mindful of energy, and a number of other subjects that the way it's kind of woven together that you may not have thought about, but and the last one for sure is probably going to make you go and scratch your head like it did mine. And so I wanted to bring him on because I just thought this was something fascinating. And so Kieran, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Suzanne. Interested to have a conversation with you. Yes.
Yes. And so the first thing when we first started talking online about having you on the show, it was that subject of climate action and doing our part. And you made this interesting distinction, and I'd like you to go into depth on that, of there's mitigation versus restoration. And what you were saying, yeah, we can kind of correct and change what we're doing going forward, but what do we do about the damage that has already been done? And so on that, I turn that one over to you.
Okay. So that actually always reminds me of the analogy I take. My wife is always behind me to reduce weight. So what I always promise her, that incrementally going forward, I will not add grams, kilograms, or pounds, or calories to me. So that's my promise to her. She's happy. I'm happy. But I know, what about the fat accumulated over the years, right? So everybody talks about climate mitigation, that we will not add any more net carbon to the atmosphere. Good. Net carbon is a very interesting subject. The word net. Net is essentially something minus something. So they will continue to add carbon, but they will mitigate it through some other action somewhere else. And hence, as a net effect, they are saying we will be net zero. That is because in 2015, about 195 countries agreed that by the end of the century, we will not let the temperature of the world go beyond 1.5 degree or 2 degrees Celsius as per the pre-industrial levels. That's a good commitment. Commendable one, because having the consensus of 195 countries itself is a Herculean task which has been achieved. But what about the damage happened to the atmosphere over the period of time? There is already so much carbon accumulated into the atmosphere, and we need to essentially remove that carbon in some way or other. So that's all about restoration, restoring the past. Mitigation is all about future. Your endeavors need to be socially, environmentally responsible. Good. That's mitigation. But what about the past? That's the restoration. And that's what I think I always try to give this analogy of your own weight loss, that incrementally you would not add calories to your body. But what about the fat accumulated over the years? Let's do something about it. And I think that's how I would like to end it here.
Right. And so that way, as you're thinking about that sustainability plan, or what am I going to do for my green initiative? That I guess what I'm hearing you're, that you're suggesting is that a component of that sustainability or that green plan needs to include measures to address the damage that has already been done.
Yes.
And if it can be corrected. So we've got an aging infrastructure. And so I guess part of that, you know, that can be an expensive undertaking. We've got aging infrastructure around the world, and we're worried about, you know, just keeping our systems functional. And there's always a question of, okay, well, where are we going to get the money to do this? How are we going to spend the money? And so you had mentioned we need to be more aware. And I just spoke with a gentleman this morning. It was very interesting. It's kind of a spin on the PPP, which is the CIP. So, you know, community impact and involvement, you know, partnerships, whereas the PPP is, you know, private-public partnerships. So I'd like you to explain how, as it relates mainly because of our audience is mainly in wastewater, how can wastewater entities, whether it be the collection systems or treatment, really be looking to take advantage of some of these PPP opportunities that are out there to not just take care of, again, getting back to what you said, taking care of the problem that they need to correct so that it won't get worse, but how do we correct the damage and prevent it from continuing to happen? And so on that, how can we avail ourselves of some of these opportunities with PPP?
Yeah.
I know it's a big question and a loaded question too.
No, it's an interesting topic. You talked PPP is one aspect people know in bits and pieces. You just mentioned you met somebody and talked about the community involvement into it. That's very interesting angle. So let's look at it. So infrastructure in general, or water wastewater infrastructure in particular, has always been traditionally the forte of government. So public service is the government's job. Governments all around the world have been doing it. So they will take the money from their budget. They will pay the contractor. Contractor will build the asset, a sewerage treatment plant or a wastewater treatment plant, and he will go away. Now government will do the operation and maintenance themselves, or they will give an annual operation and maintenance contract to somebody else. So far, so good. If you look at the historical assets condition today, they have not been maintained well, because there is so much at the government offices people are doing. They have limited bandwidth, they have limited expertise, and overall decision making is very slow. So that has actually affected the quality of the asset over the period of time. Now, what does that mean? That means we are wasting more water, we are wasting more energy, and we are actually wasting the public money on such assets. So what happened? As things getting difficult for government finances, they started looking for alternative ways in which they can build such assets and maintain such assets. And then there come the concept of build, own, and transfer. Build, own, operate, and transfer. BOT, BOOT are only one of the examples. It is essentially a type of public-private partnership. So wherein the private sector, instead of being a contractor and taking money for the work done and going away, they are essentially taking the ownership by putting their own money. So they have their skin in the game. Now there are contractual arrangements where there are obligations, clauses on the private sector participant to achieve certain goals. So one is construction related goals, finish the work in time, finish the work in certain quality parameters, maintain the assets even after the commercial operation date is over for the next 20, 30 years, whatever period of the concession is. So what is happening here? Government is essentially outsourced its responsibility of serving the public to somebody else, that is the private sector. So the private sector will bring its money, private sector will bring its expertise, private sector will bring its systems approach. And there is a legal obligation on the private sector that if they want to recover their money over the next 30 years, they will have to maintain the asset. So the beauty of concession agreement is that it is contractually inbuilt to maintain the assets, as against the traditional method where governments were doing on their own, although they were accountable to public, it was not that easy to get that accountability achieved on the ground. And that's the reason you will see that a lot of wastewater treatment plants, sewage treatment plants are actually left to the fate of itself. They are not being maintained well. And that's how the concept of PPP came. Now, when we talk about government serving public, definitely public is part of it. A PPP, public is a government, private is a private sector corporation or a company, and it's a partnership. But the third angle of PPP is public. So what you mentioned, community, the public consent for such projects is must. So there are concepts of public hearing where the input of public is taken. But going forward, it's not only the consent, but their involvement is also equally important, because the way in which, like, let's say the example of waste treatments, solid waste management, the projects worldwide have failed because the segregation of dry waste and wet waste has not happened at the source. So unless public is fully involved, public is made aware, and public is actually get consented into the project is not going to be successful. So that's why we can call it probably a 4P, public, private, and people partnership. And that's how the movement people come into picture, right from the design of the project, conception of the project, implementation and operation of the project will be in true sense successful. And that's a good point that you brought to community, the people. It's a public-private people partnership. And to the topic of especially wastewater, the water stress areas are not having sufficient fresh water. So there is a need, rather necessity, for us to maintain the STPs in adequate quantity and quality so that the water is recycled back to the people and they are not actually facing the issues of water shortages.
Or taking the burden of, you know, the water shortage.
And yes,
which leads us into the third thing that I really wanted you to talk about. And this, when you first mentioned it, I scratched my head. And as I said, when I started out, you brought up a sustainability measure. And I'll preface it and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, we are a technological society. And as we grow in technology, it's all being data driven. And that data has to be processed and held or served somewhere. And so what is needed are data centers. And data centers are, and I'm going to let you explain what a data center is, because people may think, oh, it's a bunch of people sitting behind desks on, you know, customer service calls and saying, hi, this is Microsoft, what's your problem? No, that's not what we mean by a data center. And how and why data centers, which by and large are very large energy consumers, okay, of resources, and how wastewater treatment plants are also very large energy consumers, you know, for the treatment process, you know, aeration, pumps, whatnot, using a ton of kilowatt. How by a data center and a wastewater treatment plant kind of getting married, you know, a marriage of convenience, I would say, how they can actually help each other in reducing their carbon footprint and their energy costs. And so I know probably you're going, a data center, a wastewater treatment plant, how's that going to work? And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Kieran, and explain what all goes into we know what goes on, those listening, we know what goes on at the wastewater treatment plant, but I would like you to explain what goes on in the data center and its needs and how you see these two entities can help each other.
Yes, interesting point you mentioned, the marriage of convenience. So before I talk more about the marriage, the more about the courtship, I'll take you back to 20 years. So remember we had digital cameras in early 2000s.
Right.
So the megapixel size was like 2 megapixel, 5 megapixel was, okay, that's the best camera anybody can have. Yeah, right. And the size of the one photograph taken digitally was less than 1 MB. Okay. Fast forward today, Some of the companies are talking about 100 megapixel. So one a size of one picture taken, one selfie taken, will be in excess of 10 to 25 MB. Now imagine how many people are not only clicking the picture, but they are uploading it on their social media, they are transmitting over social media platforms. And then there are a whole set of people who are doing TikToks and the reels and the videos. So the amount of data getting not only generated, but being transmitted, and there must be somebody who is holding it, right? Our Gmails are full. We get an alert that your storage is full, do something about it. Now, where all that data is going, Instagram, Facebooks, and the WhatsApps, they're storing it somewhere, right? So where are they storing? They cannot store right in the Manhattan. They cannot store right in the Bay Area. They have to store it somewhere which is economical. So now we're talking about only storage part of it. Now there is something known as processing. Let's say crypto, people talk about crypto. Now one crypto trade has so much analysis, so much data processing, and so much data synthesis going on in microsecond. So they need huge amount of power to process that data. And that power consumed by data center to process the data has a side effect that the processor actually heats up. You know, your phone, your laptop heats up sometime if the multiple processes are going on simultaneously. So our equipments are not designed to handle so much data. So we are not having that much of an issue. But look at a data center where a terabyte of data is getting processed every second, the amount of heat generated. So they have a different problem. They have their problem. One is, of course, heat dissipation. Second is they need huge amount of energy to run those data centers. And the third very critical aspect they have is about the data latency. Just one second. There was a background noise, sorry. So data latency. So they need the data to be available to the user so seamlessly that he is not feeling that the data center is probably thousands of miles away somewhere else from his own location. So things like, let's say you want trading on the stock exchanges, you want the trade to be happening in microsecond. The questions like automobile, the driverless automobiles, where the data is captured locally, processed locally, and even that has to be fed back to the server so that the server is getting smarter and smarter. So there is so much data microsecond latency issues involved, which are totally dependent on the physical distance of the data center from the user base. Most of the user base is in urban areas. So they need as much possible nearer to the urban areas. Now urban areas, they need land. Land is costly. Data center cannot be feasible if it is built on a very costly land. So that is one aspect of the need being closer to the urban areas, the user base. Second aspect, we talked about the energy, that they need to consume energy and they need to dissipate the heat. So there comes the ways in which we can find location to co-locate the data center. So the sewage treatment plants happen to be among the urban areas and where their already user base is having a huge demand for the
Well, that was interesting, Kiran, in that you said they have a need for land. And so I guess that's where you were bringing about where the advantage was, because land can be very expensive, to be near customers, that putting a data center in proximity to a wastewater treatment plant that is already situated near an urban center to serve its customers may be an ideal thing. And so I thought that was an interesting thing, and I'll let you take it from there as to what is needed and how that would all take place as far as it being an advantage.
Yes. So we talked about the location because we need land, we need premise to set up. The second most important aspect we talked about is the heat dissipation. We need to dissipate the heat somewhere. So that there comes the wastewater treatment's need for the heat. we know that the secondary treatment, we break down the organic matters into the sewage treatment plant, and the organisms essentially need some amount of heat to essentially make the process more efficient. So they need heat, the sewage treatment plant process, and data center need to dissipate the heat. So one convenience was the location. Second convenience is about the heat transfer. So there are certain companies who have some patented technologies which actually need some modification to the legacy water treatment plant, but they actually use the heat from the data center to warm the chemical process involved in the treatment plant. And that way, there is a energy efficient process when a data center is co-located with a sewage treatment plant. So we talked about the energy. Now the third, the heat dissipation, sorry. The third aspect is the energy. Now data center need energy, and we know that a sewage treatment plant, if designed in that particular manner, can actually generate methane gas. The methane gas, if it is not properly used, can add to more pollution. It is more damaging, almost 28 times more damaging than carbon to the environment. And that methane gas can be used to essentially run a small gas generation plant, and can that energy can be used, which otherwise have got wasted to the atmosphere. And that is a third aspect of energy, where the co-location of data center can actually help the whole process. So that's how the three things actually are making it convenient for us to look for this marriage.
So you were saying something when we were offline about cooling and the water being used for cooling of the data center. So how would that, were you suggesting that some of the water in the process, the wastewater, that once it's at a certain temperature, it could somehow be utilized through cooling towers to help cool the data center and then recirculate back? Is that what you were?
Yes. That is more of a technical detail, where how to design the heat transfer from one system to other system. So that can be effected through a chain of pipes. The liquid is flowing, the water is flowing, and the heat exchange can happen between the liquid which is being used at the data center for circulation. That liquid, when it gets heated, needs to be cooled down, and the water from the STP plant can be used to cool that liquid down. And that can happen in a system which is known as a heat transfer mechanism, which is essentially a series of pipes intertwined, and the liquid passes through, and they, in the process, they transfer the heat from one to other. You're right, actually.
Right, and that technology is not new. Heat transfer is just, this is just a way, and it's, I know it's, you know, been around for a long time. It's probably just never thought about how to use it to manage two very unique entities that you would never think could, I would say, play nice together or have cohabitate or a relationship together. That here's an interesting way of taking a technology that already exists to help two big energy users help each other and be more efficient. And I just thought that was a brilliant concept for people to think about, because as you were saying, that as we grow, you know, we think about the cloud. No, it really isn't a cloud. Like, we look up in the sky and see spike puffy things and, oh, my photos and my data's up there. No. It's not in a cloud. It's not literal, but data centers are basically the earthbound clouds for our data. And they don't have an infinite amount of storage, that we're probably going to need more and more and more of them.
Yes.
As technology use increases and as the population increases.
Yeah. In fact, that reminded me of the fourth benefit of the convenience of marriage, is that the governments are struggling to make the sewage treatment plant process financially viable. Because, you know, the water is not rightly priced because of various social political aspects. So to process the water, to treat the water, there is X amount of cost to be involved, and that governments, all governments, like for example, some city government may be wealthy enough, some city government may not be wealthy enough to run that plant effectively. Even if it is a public-private partnership, you will see in mostly developing countries, the World Banks have been, the likes of the World Bank have been funding the financial viability gap. So financially, they are not making sense to treat the water. And there, a data center, if it is co-located, part of the rent which data center would have otherwise paid to any other landlord, if they pay to the sewage treatment plant, the financial viability of the sewage treatment plant also can be improved by suitably designing a public-private partnership project wherein the government is not only helped for the construction operation aspects, but also financial aspect, where additional revenue stream is coming by way of a lease rental from the data center.
Wow, so there's a perfect, you know, PPP project right there.
Yes.
Yep, we all have to help each other on this planet. We all have to take a stand in taking care of it, because if we don't take care of the water won't take care of us.
Yes, and you, Susan, as you mentioned, the heat exchange has been there for centuries.
Right.
The examples of data center and STPs are there for a decade. Like Google wanted to set up its data center in Europe, and to be environment friendly, they started using the industrial wastewater to cool its data center down. So now it was not that data center wanted to co-locate at the STP, it was the other way around. The STP was brought to the data center to make it more energy efficient. So with the public-private partnership concepts, which are not per se very prevalent in USA, the data centers, and there is a statistics by that company which patented the system of data center co-location, they say that up to 3,000 to 5,000 STPs in USA can be used for co-location of data centers. And that can boost the financial viability of those projects, of those governments who are owning that STPs. The issue is nobody has thought about a suitable public-private partnership project designed to marry this STP with data center.
Wow. Given us a lot of food for thought. I mean, it's not something that I would ever thought of, but you know, for those listening, I think it is something that, you know, let's investigate this, because there is the need for the data centers, and it's going to be growing. And like you were saying, that financial benefit is probably, it's great that you're doing something for the planet, but you're bringing down your energy costs. You're both bringing down your energy costs. You're doing something for the planet. But I think probably the thing that would make a wastewater treatment plant, you call them STPs, I know it's sanitary treatment plant, a wastewater treatment plant, their ears perk up and go, oh, wait a minute. So this could become a revenue stream for the plant that I never thought about, as well as reduce my energy, which, you know, relates to costs. And so when there's a financial benefit tied to being doing something good for the planet, that usually is something that will make people say, maybe we should give this a second thought. And so, hey, thank you for bringing that, you know, explaining that, bringing that thought to the forefront for us today. And so for those of you who are listening, Kieran, I'd like you to share if they would like to learn more about these topics that we've been talking about today, the concepts, if they need to speak to someone about, you know, impact consulting and how they could, you know, take advantage of some of these things, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, I think the best way to get in touch with me is LinkedIn. I've been very active there, supporting various ideas, exchanging ideas with various different companies and forums. And I'm really happy, open to initiate dialogue on this subject, where we can bring the impact aspects into the infrastructure development. And public-private partnership is only one of the various ways in which we can imbibe the impact aspects into the infrastructure development. And I'll be more than happy to exchange ideas with people on this subject.
Oh, well, fantastic. And again, thank you for being on the show and sharing all of your information and these, you know, I would say thought-provoking ideas. See, you know, yes. Like when we first talked, like I said, some of you are going to be scratching your head when we bring up this subject, when we made this clear. And please do reach out to Kieran. He is a wealth of knowledge. And not just that, he's just a fun person to talk to. And so on that note, we are going to close off for today. And thank you for tuning in. And until next time, keep it flowing.
Thanks so much for joining me, the Doo-Doo Diva, on this week's episode of Smells Like Money. What stood out to you this week? Share your takeaways by leaving me a review. You can find out more about the new technologies, creating sustainable solutions and insights on how to succeed in our vital industry by subscribing to the show. Whether you want to learn about the latest trends in wastewater infrastructure, treatment, or trenchless, you've got it all right here at Smells Like Money. If you're an industry expert and would like to be considered as a guest for the show, book a quick chat with me by visiting calendly.com/thetuitgroup/B-A-podcast-guest, or simply click the link in the show notes below. Until next week, a big shout out to all my industry friends and those who will be. You are my superheroes. Thanks for tuning in, keeping it flowing, and we'll see you all next week.